Coming to you from the City of the Weird. Exploring topics from the esoteric and unexplored to dimensions unknown. Shining a light of truth on the darkest corners of our reality. Welcome to the Curious Realm. Well, hello everybody and happy Tuesday night. Hope everybody is doing well. Hope you've had a great week. Hope you've had a better week than me. I am still recovering from surgery right now as my arm is mummified. But they've done an amazing job. No more tingles in my left hand. It's fantastic. I can't wait to see what happens once things are fully healed. Pretty excited about tonight. It kind of came together. Emergency status. Our good friend Ryan Edwards had to reschedule for tonight. And it was fortuitous, actually, because today was the task force for the declassification of federal secrets presser that happened. We will be getting into that with our good friend CJ Arabia. She is from Southern California MUFON. She is the Southwest Regional Director of MUFON, which is like everything on the West Coast plus, you know, Hawaii, all kinds of things. So we will be getting into some MUFON stuff tonight. We will be getting into what this statement means. And then in the second part, we will be joined by our good friend Tom Reed in pre-recorded fashion to discuss the second tranche of files that has come out. We'll get into a couple of the videos, things like that, but we'll talk about the cause of disclosure to begin with, what it's all about. What these meetings are about. And there's a clip that will play hopefully tonight, from Tim Burchett, who actually says at the end exactly what I've been saying. Welcome to the show, CJ Arabia. How are you doing this evening? Hold on. Okay, there we go.
Can you hear me? Do I look okay? I like the format. Oh, yeah. I see what you were talking about. So, but that is that way. So if I want to be more way, I got to go this way.
There you
way.
Go.
Okay, so I just got to adjust it just slightly.
That's how short notice it was, folks. Like literally, even with the new template, we just got connected as that countdown clock started. So
I mean, seriously, I'm so sorry. I was literally making chicken nuggets for my kid. Like, this is the life of a MUFON investigator, because you know it's a volunteer job, so you just have a life, and it's like I'm making nuggets, I'm looking at UFOs, I'm talking to you.
Well, and the fact is, it is nonstop, CJ. It's always nonstop, especially there on the West Coast. You guys have the majority of states that get the majority of sightings.
And some of the big famous ones too, right? We're talking about Roswell, and you get into all the whole Southwest region. I mean, it's just legendary. Like, I don't know how I found myself in this magical, like it's such an honor, because I'm so fascinated with the topic, obviously, of UFOs, or why would I be here at MUFON?
Yeah.
And to be able to see this many cases, and like, I even started working on the CMS coordination group, like to look at even like a more, you know, I get to see all the cases in the United States better. Like, it's just so fun. Like, I don't know. I love it. Like, there's nothing else I'd rather be doing with my time. So thanks for having me on to talk about today's events. I love your open. I feel like I say that every time I'm on. You have such a nice open.
Well, I appreciate that. Truly. Yeah. This whole thing, once again, as I've been saying on the show, as we've been saying on the show since your predecessor, Earl Grey, and honestly, it did a lot of justice to Earl today. Earl still, CJ, is somebody that I regularly reach to my phone to like share news articles with, things like that, where it's like, oh, I need to share this with Earl. And it's like, no, Earl has answers that we don't have right now. You know,
right. I would text Earl's phone number if I didn't know that his wife, Lisa, still has it on and checks it.
But he was one of the people who I had in my back pocket, one of about 3-4 guests. Mike Turber is in that lot, you know, Jared Murphy, some good company. And you have now hit that back pocket five of if something's happening in the news, or if I have a guest that randomly drops, I might be able to give CJ a call and have her on and talk about what's happening in the communities, things like that. Thank you for being able to pinch hit in such a way. I greatly appreciate it.
I was thinking about you today, man, and just thinking like the same thing about you. I was thinking about Earl, and I was thinking like how I inherited a group of friends just because they were close with Earl. And Earl probably talked to you about me because he talked to me about you and about Susan Alloway and like all these people, and Steve and Mary from Breaking the Silence, who we love so much, and Dan Harari and all the people, you know, like the people. So we all knew who he was talking to, but I think when he died, it connected a lot of us. Like, I don't know that I would be here. If Earl was alive, he would be here, obviously.
Yeah. But one of the things that we talked about was, since the very first hearing that's happened in Congress, and it was the idea of people in all of our communities, UFO, UAPY, CJ, have been very upset with all of this stuff. Even today, before, whenever I got a hold of you, just before I started watching and rewatching the presser, I saw a thing from Giorgio Tsoukalos talking about it, where he's like, oh, you know, you guys just carrying on and toeing the line of lying to us. Yeah,
that's what I've heard from a lot of people that I know that are very involved in or actual experiencers, you know, people whose stories are really vetted, kind of stuff. Like, I've gotten this response from people. I guess I had low expectations and they barely met, maybe a little below my low expectation. Right? They were right below.
Yeah. And the one thing that Burchett said, that once again I've been saying since the beginning, is that this is not for the average. This is not for the person in the UFO community. This is not for the person in the know.
Yeah.
These hearings aren't happening for that reason. These disclosures aren't trying to happen for that reason. He's like, whether or not we will find out about Little Green Men doesn't matter. What matters is that apparently these people have for years and decades thought that Little Green Men were interesting enough to spend billions of your dollars on. And what did what did they spend it on?
They really talked about the money today, which is sort of like an angle not everybody has taken. They did really focus on the trillions. Whereas I wish I had my notebook. I made notes for you, Chris, and then I left it out by the Nuggets.
That's all right. No,
the trillions and trillions of dollars being spent. And that's it. Like, even when I doubt myself, even when I doubt what I saw as a kid, even when I doubt the stuff that got me involved in this, right? You know, like, I'm, you know, sometimes, you know, you sit there and you're brushing your teeth and you go, what if this is all baloney? Like, what if this is somehow, you know, but it's like, then you start to go back. No, what about this? You know, this and this and this and this. And it just becomes like to see these people talking in this way about it. And I don't know. It was just, I mean, I'm glad to see people talking about it, but you're right. It's for the rest of the people, guys. Like, we've all been here. We know this is real. But guess what? There is like 90% of the population that is not where we are at.
That's
all.
Right.
And you know what? Even in our own, like, even in the UFO and paranormal communities, I don't know if some people realize how real they really, really are. And I wonder how those people are going to feel when they also, like, you know, because there's a lot of, like, abstract experiences and stuff. And I'm like, like, my husband, like, I don't, you know, like, I hate sharing my opinions sometimes, but when I got home from contact, I was just like, you know, some of these people, I don't know if they understand how real this is. Like, they speak about it and I'm like, yeah, but I think if you were looking, like Jay Stratton talks about looking at a non-human, what is it, biologic, yeah. Right? I mean, we got to use the words. I'm one of those, like, I'm a Gen Xer, so I'm always like, it's a UFO, not a UAP. But like, to look at an actual entity, which is different than like your a mental image or a dream or this or that of an entity, is going to really, that's how real this is. And I don't know if everyone is on that same page, even in our community, I guess is
yeah what I'm yeah saying. No, and you know, that's just it. And I think that's really what Burchett was saying, is the fact of like, yeah, whether you buy into little green men or not, there has been a line that has been towed in the back halls for decades that has been burning through your money. And what is that about? And that's what we want answers for. And that's, and it's called the Task Force for the Declassification of Federal Secrets. I love the title.
What are the initials?
TDFS.
TDFS. All right. The TDFS. Okay. Everybody start learning that one.
Yeah. Yeah. And, we'll do a few of the clips here. One of the first ones here. Let's play this one. This is from James Fox, and this is right up around the first minute or so. Just so you know, everybody, the clip that we are playing is from the News Nation YouTube channel that has been linked on our, playlist. If you go to the Curious Realm videos playlist, our playlist declassified UFO UAP panels, will find it there.
If you didn't hear it, go listen to it. Just listen while you're making dinner.
It's all of 34 minutes.
It's super short.
But here is James Fox talking and giving his statement.
Cases like those that the United States Air Force desperately tried to keep secret. Because it's one thing to try and confuse the public with weather balloons and swamp gas, and another entirely different when dealing with credible reports of non-human beings on the ground. I personally investigated one such case for over 16 years. The case occurred in Varginha, Brazil in 1996, and involves dozens of first-hand reports of UAP and direct contact with living, intelligent, non-human beings who, according to multiple Brazilian witnesses, were flown out of Brazil to the United States in January of 1996. Recently, the former Brazilian Ministry of Defense, Aldo Rebelo,
remaking the rounds here recently.
And
once again, confirmed by Brazilian authorities to have happened.
That's one of those ones. There's the ones that really stand out, and there's just so much evidence and so many witnesses, you know, like the, what's the family in the farmhouse? And they're like, that thing was crazy. That's one of the ones that always, what is that one? Do you know what I mean? The family in the farmhouse, and they were like robots outside.
Oh, ding. I cannot recall.
There were like 13 of them. I'll remember it by this is over and leave it in the comments.
But
there's so many good ones.
A lot of this comes down to, and there are people who are upset with how whistleblowers have come forward. There are people who are upset with all kinds of things attached to this. And it's fascinating to hear some of the politic behind these things. And I have said, because that was one of the things that Trump ran on in his first presidency. There were two big promises, and one of them was the JFK files, which got released. And another one was UFO UAP disclosure. And everybody thought it was going to happen. You know, lo and behold, it is happening. No doubt.
Things are being dumped. You know, between this and, you know, even Spielberg's interview that a lot of people are talking about, like he said some stuff in there that I think, like, see, Steve from the Breaking the Silence, also another YouTube channel. If you guys want to check it out, I think they're listening right now. I told them to listen in. But, you know, he said maybe they'll listen to Spielberg, you know, if they don't listen to these guys, maybe they'll listen to Congress. You know what I mean? Maybe this is all just how to help the public take this, like, this is a big thing to take in.
Well, and that's just it. And that's what we get into in the next segment with Tom Reed, yeah. All kinds of stuff. Even as a former Catholic seminarian, you know, it's one of those. This was a conversation that we would have, not just epistemologically, but philosophy wise around the dinner table regularly, you know, like what would happen if this, would it change the faith? Would anything happen? Would it change society as we know?
They promptly dumped that exorcist who said they're demons.
Like, well, absolutely. Absolutely. Like, and rightfully so. And I will put the call out right now to any collar wearing friends. I have quite a few. If any of you out there would like to come on and respond to that, because I am in support. I am in support of why they got rid of and why they de-officed an exorcist. What they did was say, you are no longer an exorcist if this is what you're going around saying.
Yeah,
because
you're trying to, because you're exorcising them of aliens. Like, what are you talking about?
No. It's more the fact of you cannot say all. Yeah. You can't blanket statement say all, because your job as an exorcist is to demonologically investigate on a case by case basis. So if you're saying all, you've stopped investigating.
Exactly.
So there's a good reason that your archbishop has removed you from the office. So he hadn't been like divested of his collar. He hasn't been said, I have definitely said in groups, you want to talk anathema? That's the definition of it. Cause the church doesn't believe that. The church doesn't think that. The church doesn't publicly.
The popes have been clear. They will baptize.
What they've said clearly is that, and this isn't an ex-cathedra statement. There's no teaching in the big green book. But it was Ratzinger, Cardinal Ratzinger, who said whenever he became Pope that it would not, if aliens were found, that it would not change the faith, that it would not change any articles of faith, that does not remove the salvific act of Christ on the cross, doesn't change anything, only further shows the bounty and beauty of God's creation.
For sure.
Have
you read the book, The Bible and Flying Saucers?
Oh, yeah.
Barry Downey. That book is so good. And Barry Downing is still alive. Hello, Barry. I'm going to send Barry the link. I've been friends with Barry ever since I read his book and just started emailing him. But like, if you are religious or Christian or whatever, any kind of religion, read The Bible in Flying Saucers. He's a pastor and he's got a degree in physics. Am I right? But anyway, his book is amazing and his look at the Bible is amazing. And he pulled a lot of stuff out of there that I never even would have thought of.
Well, and you know, that's just it. That's what this does, is open conversations. That's what's being done through these panels, through events like what happened today with David Grush, and Luna Burleson was there, James Fox, all kinds of folks that have been involved with this. Leslie Keen gave a fantastic statement.
I love seeing her.
She did incredible stuff. And whenever you talk about these things, one of them that I want to get into real quick, that let me find where it was. Go. Now my page is turning. Here it was. It was right up around minute 11 with Tim Burchett. And he was talking about how compartmentalized these things are and the issues that they face trying to get these things out in the public and trying to discuss this stuff. Here you go.
Talking for too long. Well, I'll keep it short. I'm a redneck, proudly. But it's a pleasure being here with you. I want to first salute the bravery of these folks standing back here on the back row for their guts. This country was not created by a bunch of meek pansies. It was people that took a stand, and these fellas took a stand, and thank y'all so much. I really appreciate that. And I appreciate my colleagues in Congress. Right, I even have to say it. I have to appreciate my friends in the media today. So there you go. I've crossed over the divide. But, you know, I talked to the president about this issue, and he kept his word to me. He kept his word, and I think that's important. But I think we also need to remember, too, when I'm sitting in a skiff and some little punk in a man bun tells me the president's on a need-to-know basis, folks, that ought to tell you right there what we're up against. We're up against corruption. We're up against a cover-up. This thing's been covered up at least since 1947. Dadgummit, the public deserves the right to know. It's your dadgum tax dollars. It's not about little green men or flying saucers. It's about what are we spending all these millions and possibly billions of dollars on that these idiots tell us don't exist. And then yet we turn right around in the skiff, and then they tell us they do exist. This is a cover-up. You all know it. We know it. We demand the answers, and dadgummit, we're going to get them. Look, We got one.
That's what I like. I don't know. I am not the color of this show. The color of this show is purple for a reason. I am not a politically motivated guy on either side of the fence. I'm kind of right. Of that mind where it's like, I don't care who you are. I will ride you out of town on a rail, asking you questions.
Yeah.
And to hear that from a sitting congressman is fantastic. It's great.
Yeah.
And hopefully we can keep that up. I think we've, at least as a community and the panel, has done a fantastic job, I think, keeping up the flames and keeping it moving forward in that kind of way.
Yeah, I hope so. I mean, it was good to see everybody out there talking. I just hope they get more organized and we get, I mean, whatever, you know, the people like us are going to always want more than what's being given because what's being given is, you know, it's like, I don't know what it is. It's like building up the immunity and the rest of the community and the rest of the world, you know?
Yeah. Well,
the understanding.
Well, yes. And that's just it. It's very much an onboarding to the topic. Is the easiest way to put it, because go ahead. No.
I was going to say they're just great opportunities to speak to the public, you know, like, I'm going to be working with a local library, the San Fernando Valley here of Los Angeles, because they would like to help educate the general public. I wanted to mention that on your show. Like, if you have a local library, please tell them that you would like to get educated on the topic of UFOs. And if they don't know who to reach out to, tell them to reach out to their state MUFON chapter and send some people down, like, and do cases of interest and bring some speakers down and talk to the public, because, like, this is kind of what has to happen now. The rest of the people, I mean, there's some people who are still not going to believe, but there's a certain level of people that are going to start to realize, oh, I need to know more. This is real. It's not a joke. And I need to learn more about it. And that's what I think a lot of this stuff is for. But yeah. It feels good to see them saying it, you know,
like, absolutely.
Knowing this my whole life, you still feels good. You're like, I still sometimes feel like I can't believe people who have literally laughed at me will call me and say, my friend saw a UFO. You know, like, if 10 or 15 years ago have laughed in my face when I told them I saw a UFO, will call me now and talk about UFOs. So
yeah,
people are understanding. And that's what this was about. This is just another, like, they need to keep doing these regularly for the public to just get used to this is the way it is. And also more stuff will come as you do more of them.
Well, and that's just it. You know, it really is the fact of the more in public, I think one of the big problems you can have is, and a prime example is, Edward Snowden. Mm-hmm. Feel free to take a look at where his whistleblowing self is right now.
Right.
You know, like, he has to literally live in Russia to be safe from our government. And that's kind of frightening to think about and know about. And it was his whistleblowing, and don't get me wrong, like, you know, Lou Elizondo would have a field day tearing apart Edward Snowden and his form of whistleblowing, because what Edward Snowden did was, yes, take a classified presentation and make it public, and in a very unceremonious way. You know, it wasn't done through going to the press in any kind of way like Leslie Keen or something like that, where like things were a soft point. It was very, very flagrant, very in your face, very, here is the weakness, here's the problem, and look at what they're doing in the meantime.
You know, Chris, two people have texted me asking me if we're live, and I just loaded the YouTube page and I don't know if we're live. Are we supposed to be?
We should be.
Well, if you look at your YouTube page really quick.
Okay.
Am I wrong? Am I wrong? I just got two different texts from people saying, did it get canceled? I just reloaded it. Maybe I shared the wrong link. I don't know. It says
that. Oh, it didn't automatically go live. Sorry, folks. There you go.
Yeah.
We're live now.
Oh,
my YouTube, and see, that's why
we're here.
Sorry, folks. Hey. There's a lot of buttons to juggle when you're by yourself running all this stuff. That is normally on autopilot, to where whenever I hit start stream, it goes live, and it was not tonight.
Okay. Oh, I gotta shut your YouTube.
That is my.
Sorry,
that is on my end. Yeah.
There's an echo.
Mute me.
Okay, we're live now, but they're not listening probably right now. But Steve and
thank you guys for letting us know,
texting me and telling me I didn't understand what they were saying at first, and then I went to check on YouTube. So.
Yeah, yeah.
But you'll have to watch the replay of all of this, because there's some good stuff in the first part.
Well, and all of this will be available. I'll make sure to replace it all if anything, stuff like that, folks. But in all sincerity, it really is the conversation of how do you onboard people to the conversation? How do you get people to the topic that are not interested in the topic? Because eventually, unfortunately, it's going to happen. Like it's gonna happen. The topic's gonna happen. It's gonna pop up on your screen. It's gonna pop up in your news feed. It's gonna when the big day of big D disclosure does happen, it's gonna happen. And there's no denying it at that point. So
are you gonna go
how
see
do
the
you
movie
prep people
week?
For that?
Well, the movie, I feel like all the timing of this and the movie and stuff, everything. Are you going to the movie this week?
I intend to go see the movie this week. Yes.
I'm supposed to go on Thursday with, Steve and Mary and a couple of like experiencers and maybe even Bob Salas. So that would be fun to see that movie with him.
Interesting. Yeah.
And then some Chinese food.
Well, and you know, once again, these conversations, these ideas, I've got Leslie Keen queued up right now. She's about 17 minutes in. And she starts talking about some of these programs that people have been a part of, some of the programs that people have attested to. She specifically brings up one whistleblower who is not there. But the whole idea of whistleblowing, once again, I think a huge rallying cry behind this whole event today was we need to protect whistleblowers. That's quite literally what Luna said at the end was we need to step forward. We need to make sure we have a safe space for these people to step forward and that they have immunity when they come forward. Yeah.
They all need a presidential pardon. They all need a pardon from whatever they say regarding these topics.
Well,
they need to be able to speak freely. Like, what's in Jay Stratton's book coming out in October? Like, what can he say?
The call today was to remove, to have a presidential executive order to remove their NDAs. To make them not susceptible to the binding NDAs that they signed. Because that's what's keeping them from...
Imagine what
time.
They're going to say when
things
they've
like
already
that.
Said all this stuff. What are they going to say? You know, they've already told the public that there's, you know, ships and entities, NHI, NH, whatever.
Yeah.
So what are they going to tell us when they're allowed to speak freely?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, wow. And that's just it. You know, when you start and. Let me see. Where was it? Here is Grush right here talking, okay. Talking about exactly what he did, what his job was, inside of this world.
Technology protection issues that must be taken in consideration. For decades, unknown objects have freely operated in restricted airspace in large metropolitan areas and critical infrastructure, and the agencies responsible for securing the homeland cannot adequately defend against it. This is a serious national security issue.
Imagine being able to build anything just by thinking
about it. It is a serious national security issue. Let's get past that quick commercial on the News Nation. There we go.
Special duties, I was exposed to human and signals intelligence information concerning foreign adversary, UAP crash retrieval, exploitation and study efforts, adversary views on U.S. legacy program reverse engineering efforts, and U.S. held audiovisual information related to crash retrieval matters, such as the recovered vehicles and the associated biological material. One must always be concerned about.
So those were the things that he was involved with. Those are the things that he was tasked with, was looking into how foreign nations were recovering these, looking into how we studied what foreign nations did, things like that. And as he goes on to say, as you were saying at the beginning, just a couple minutes later, he goes into the slush fund of billions of dollars.
Yeah. Well, slush fund of billions. Trillions of dollars. So, yeah. I mean, the money is endless. The money is unfathomable. Like, we could be living in a utopia if we had that money available to the people. It was like...
It would be, I mean, you know, we've actually done the math on air. It's actually pretty shameful. It's one of those, like, if we made like three less F-22 Raptors next year, we could afford, like, you know, basic universal income for everybody, you know, right. Like it's pretty ridiculous. It's pretty wrong.
Our priorities are not what mine would be, but whatever.
Well, and when you start getting into specifically the black budget line items in the NDAA, right. The National Defense Authorization Act, where these things come from, stuff like that, you know, like, Burchette was saying a while ago, we go into a skiff and some kid with a man bun is telling us that the president of the United States is not on a need to know basis.
Who's the man bun? Do we know who that is? Who have we seen on these UFO shows?
I know, right? Like,
that claims to be CIA, you know, like those ones. I've seen a few shows and there is a dude with a man bun. And I was like, is it that dude with the man bun that does the remote viewing and calls the UFOs down? Is that the guy with the man bun? I don't know who it is, but.
But I mean, all of these things are.
Yeah.
Phenomenal to talk about, phenomenal to hear members of Congress say in public.
This is crazy to me to hear people talk about this, like people in our government or even Spielberg or, you know, saying that like this week, like it's crazy to me.
Well, and you know, Spielberg, I haven't had a chance to watch his interview yet. That came out, but even still, it's one of those, I guess my mother-in-law was like a consultant on Boston Legal, you know, it's things like that, where it's like, yes, they have consultants. They have people like, do you think he didn't sit down and talk with Jacques Vallée when he decided to write a part based on partially Jacques Vallée?
Yeah.
You know, like, like guaranteed he did. So yes, Spielberg is definitely in I would say he is in the know as much as any government official.
Yeah, for sure.
Outside of secure lines.
Right.
So anybody that isn't sitting in these skiffs, stuff like that, he has the same access, probably a little bit better access people like Jacques Vallée, experiencers, exactly. Things like that, where it's like, hey, I'm doing this project. I would like to hear your story, you know, things like that.
Sit in a room with someone and get details they would not share if there was a camera on them or they were in public with other people. And he's famous, so he's probably mesmerizing and they're probably just as excited to be talking to him.
Well, and once again, you're talking about consultation for a feature film, that kind of stuff. I don't think he is privy to any Lockheed Martin Skunk Works stuff. I don't think he's privy to any kind of deep state. Like, if that's the term you want to use, I don't think that's the case with him.
Yeah,
but does he have an extraordinary realm of knowledge when it comes to these things? Yes, because he had opportunity to sit down and talk with J. Allen Hynek on Abridged. Yep. He had the opportunity to talk with literal giants in the field to gather their information and call together works of art based on their hypotheses.
Yeah. And I guess he could be a unicorn like Stephen Bassett, someone who's never seen anything. He says in interviews he's never seen anything, but I'm always shocked when people have literally never seen anything are so, you know, so understand the reality of it. It's hard, you know.
But see, and this goes back to the beginning of the conversation and a lot of the conversation going on right now, CJ, with that I'll be talking about, especially at MUFON this year, which is
at the symposium,
the way this moves through humanity, the way that these things have moved through humanity. When I joined the seminary, I expected that other people had a religious moment. CJ had a moment of epiphany at the altar where they were in a changed physical place and been in the presence of something. I assumed this. Like, hey, you know, you never been to Texas. Everybody wears a cowboy hat, right? Like, I'm going to the seminary. There's only like 60 other people in there. I assume we've all had some kind of religious epiphany moment, you know, where like the bell is rung and you had this experience. Not the case.
Not the case.
One bit. Much like the 98th percentile of people who fill the pews in any church on a given Sunday or on a Wednesday night.
Right.
Have they had that Pauline experience of being knocked off their horse and scales removed from their eyes? And
No,
they haven't. But they have faith and they are curious and they are on that adventure looking for that moment, hoping that moment happens to them. You know, no different than I think I don't think Steve Bassett is out like CE5ing his way to an experience.
No,
you know?
He's not. I don't see him. I mean, sure, maybe a contact in the desert.
But
I doubt he's like, going on the retreats and like trying to really that.
But I think he's open to an experience and he's been on the show before. I love so we need to reach out to Steve and get him back on. It's been a long time.
He is awesome. Get him on. Bring him on.
But quite literally, and that's what I think a lot of people misunderstand, CJ, about this topic is, and even when it comes to psi, when it comes to para, when it comes to any of these things, they're, and it's kind of the question I ask all the time. It's what I asked whenever I presented to Southern California MUFON. Why are we investigating? Why have we chosen to be a researcher and investigator? Is it out of true curiosity, true scientific curiosity of an anomaly in the data set? There's just something weird and funky going on and way too many similar experiences to be coinkydink, you know?
Yeah.
Or are we investigating and researching to prove something to ourselves as a integral part of our belief? You know, and those are things that we have to consider. And those are things that I don't know that a lot of people are ready to consider about, like, the dishwashing detergent they use. Much
let alone
much less the intricacies of the universe and their place within divinity in it. Like, it's a ground shaker. It's a ground shaker.
Exhausting.
It is. It is. Even just the words I said to say it were exhausting, CJ.
I'm so tired even hearing you say it. Like, oh, God, I could just go to bed right now when this is over. I'm going to, like, do a slug of NyQuil and just hit the bed. I mean, that's like, it. But it is true. But, you know, I think about that, too, just even with this or whatever you call it, the phenomena, UFOs, whatever you call it. But it's just, like, it's exhausting. You know, it's just, it's something, like, you talk about ontological shock. And in some ways, I feel like I've been in ontological shock since I was like 6 years old and saw that UFO hovering 20 feet over my head,
which
just like it doesn't stop. Like you don't go out of, like you're just constantly, you know, and you try to, you forget about it. You get on with your life, you do stuff and then you're just sitting there like, and your mind just goes back to that moment. And you're like, I wish I could go back to that moment. Like I want to go see and experience, you know what I mean? Like it's just exhausting. It's exhausting, all of it. Like, I'm jealous of people who have had zero, like my husband, zero UFOs or paranormal or anything. Like, jealous.
I can appreciate that.
It's a lot to ponder.
Well, and, you know, at the same token, CJ, I have fully been on the opposite and embittered side of things after I left the seminary. And going back to just being a member of the flock in the pew and having the kind of the and very icky moment. Like I think back on it now as to how unevolved emotionally my moment was, because there were sometimes the only way I can explain it is very Machiavellian moments of disdain.
Yeah.
For like, you know, I wonder what you really believe without experience.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard. Cause you know,
that's what I'm saying though, is that like, I've even had that point of view in life. I have experienced that. I have been there and I am no longer in that point of view in life.
Yeah.
You know,
right?
So I can grasp both sides. It's kind of like I've told my wife before. One of the things that fascinates me truly is the Heaven's Gate cult.
Yeah. I'm from San Diego. So,
And really more the fact of, and I did tons of archiving on that for MUFON, IUFOB, things like that.
Right.
Like 20 hours of video and audio, that kind of stuff. And it's fascinating. But I remember after watching the documentary, my wife being like, I don't understand. Cause it's not like these were like, you know, cabbage farmers or something like that that were sucked into this cult. These were like computer engineers, PhDs, doctors, physicians,
families who loved them. They were
things like that, like pioneers in the world of the internet, that kind of stuff. It was fascinating. But I was like, at the end of it, she was like, I don't understand how. And I was like, I get that. Like, and even in my heart of hearts now, I fully understand why every one of them made the decision that they made and recorded their decision on tape for their family to let them know, like, hey, I am at peace with my decision. This is what I think is right in the world and in the universe. I find it very hard to fault any of them in the world of, quote, true believer in that kind of way.
Yeah, like I wish I believed in anything as much as they believed in that. What was it? The Hale-Bopp comet?
Yes, Comet Hale-Bopp.
Yeah, I remember when it was going over. I remember going out to the front yard as a kid and like watching it go through this sky because it was up there and thinking about what it must have been like for a Neanderthal to see something like that just in the sky for a while and then disappear or what, you know, like thinking it's a sign or something. Like, yeah, they really make you ponder those kind of events.
And you know, the whole reason, folks, why I keep bringing up this point of faith is because there's a very distinct divide age-wise and trust-wise in our country when it comes to our government. There is still my grandparents' generation, probably about half my parents' generation, still fully believe in and trust their government, CJ.
Yeah. There's people that do.
As a child of 75, some of the first political words I remember in my life are the 10 most dangerous words in the world are "I'm from the government and I'm here to help." That was Ronald Reagan.
Right.
But I will always remember that little bit of wisdom my whole life.
Yeah, you're just a little bit younger than me. But yeah, I mean, I lived through all that stuff too. I remember all that.
And for us, for Generation X, just before Generation X, there is a huge row of distrust that has been sown and reaped and harvested for the last generation or so, you know, with the federal government. And our eyes have been peeled wide open. But I think it's the same situation that happened with MKUltra and the church hearings. The church committee hearings, when those happen, where we found out about the federal government and agencies within it wanting to warp our brains with drugs, wanting to turn people with Project Artichoke into assassins, wanting to use programs like Operation Mockingbird to use news programs to like Voice of America and things like that to disseminate messages and propaganda, that kind of stuff. These were all active programs that were funded. And after the church committee hearings, oddly enough, not stopped, just backed off of. And it says that in the history book, folks. Feel free to look it up. True. Backed off of.
These are facts.
These were throttled back. So no, we aren't going to go out and like, you know, dose a population anymore. Stuff like that. But it doesn't mean that we can't do other things. And like I've said in other shows,
Putin won't dose us without our knowledge.
Much like the recent MKUltra documents that were taken from Tulsi Gabbard's office. People are like, how is that possible? There is a law. Since the church committee hearings prevents the U.S. government and entities thereof from experimenting on the U.S. populace. However, that can be bypassed if it is for causes of national security. And the documents are protected under the same way. If those documents are a part of national security and under a compartmentalized program from a contractor that's part of national security, they have the right to come in and take those documents and seize them from the people who seized them. It's twisted. It's messed up.
Just enjoy your day, everybody. Just try to have a good day. just sleep tight, everybody. With that, good night.
Those are the mechanisms that we're dealing with, though. Those are the horrible things.
Like we were talking about, like it's the exhausting stuff. Like, you know, you can dwell in this stuff for I'll bet you can dwell for more hours than I can in this stuff for the day. But like the regular public, how can they?
My God, you have no idea how long I dwell with it in a day.
I mean, CJ. I have an idea. I can't verify it, and I'm probably off. But let me be off.
There is a great capacity inside of me to deal with it because of former jobs I've had and people I've worked with.
You're amazing in a way. Earl was like, you guys are very similar, kind of in that way too. Stuff like I was always like, F those guys, and Earl was like, no.
Hey,
Peter in the Bible, you know, where Jesus is like, like, hey, let's put that ear back on. Yeah. Don't go chopping ears off, man.
Yeah. Calm it down. I'm trying to do something over here.
Yeah, I'm Peter. I have big emotional reactions to stuff.
but in all sincerity, it is the fact of these are compartmentalized programs. That's what they eventually got into. That's what they talked about at the end. That's what Burchett talked about, was it's hard for us to hold anybody accountable. You can't FOIA request Ford.
Right.
It was the exact example he gave. And that's why these things are in those programs. That's why these things are in the hands of these contractors, you know, is so that can happen. So it's going to be interesting to see how this all plays out. It's going to be interesting to see what else we get to squeeze out of it. Once again, I think hopefully, that we will be putting forth new whistleblower protection.
Yeah, let's hope, because I think they will. I mean, they're working towards it, and I think it's going to happen, the whistleblower protection. And because I think this is how they're doing their disclosure to the public. I think this is exactly how it has to happen, because it has to be like this or they wouldn't even believe it. Sorry, I don't know if you can hear my kid crying in the background, but it's fitting that I started with nuggets and now it's crying.
Well, and you know, the thing is, there are whistleblower protections. There are things there, but there are very specific channels that you have to go through, which is why Edward Snowden doesn't enjoy that protection. That's why he's been ousted. Right. And at the same time, it's also why other people don't come forward. So like they're saying, let's get a president. We're getting presidential executive orders for all kinds of things. Let's get one to strip whistleblowers of their NDAs so that they can blow the whistle in that kind of way and not have to flee the country or flee the government or something like that in order to get the truth out there.
Yeah, they shouldn't have to. I mean, it's crazy, but this stuff has to come out, and they need to figure out whatever they need to so these guys can come forward, because that's what that's what the public wants, and that's what they need. I mean, and like you said at the top, it's not for us. It's not for, you know, the community, but we do have to be supportive of it to some degree, because it's helping the public, you know, it's helping them. And that's why I think, like, you know, talking to library, like, you know, anything we can do to help educate the general public.
Absolutely.
Can you hear my kid crying, or is it just me?
No, it's just you.
Good. Then I won't worry about it.
I'm not worried about your kid crying.
My husband's in there talking to me. I just want to make sure that I don't...
Notice my inhuman lack of concern for your child crying, CJ.
No, Mather's in there. He's fine. He's fine. He's being taken care of. But as long as it's not bothering your audience...
Oh, like, no.
Again, I'm immune to the cries.
It's hilarious because it the whole time I have done this show... Since the day it came to my home studio as Dudes and Beer, before we were on video, everything else, it has always existed next to my son's room. Always. My studio has always been right next to his room. And there was one person in an episode of Dudes and Beer that was like, what is that animal howling and yowling in the background? And I'm like, that's my 2-year-old son. You're the only animal here is you.
What?
Like, that's a baby.
Yeah, the raccoons fighting in your backyard or whatever he thought it was. Like, I mean, it's so hot, you know. I could shut this door, I guess, but like,
You're good. It's one of those. That's what children are meant to do, is to make joyful noises.
But I guess that's why I was checking. Like, do I have to shut the door? But this was all great. I mean, it was great. It was good. I watched it a couple of times, you know, and I don't know. I mean, just a lot of, there's a lot of stuff in the news right now, you know, from the Exorcist and this and the movie coming out on Thursday. And it's a big time.
Yes. Yes. It is a huge time for the community right now. It is a huge time for these topics. It is a huge time for, once again, moments of conversation, CJ. And I think that's really what it comes down to. Even with Cygames, that has been a huge point of conversation, is how do we onboard people to the topic? And that's what Congress is dealing with. That's what this, hold on, let me get to the task force for the declassification of federal secrets. That's what they are all about right now. I love the title because it's not just stopping at UFO UAP. We're going to be talking about modern MK Ultra stuff. We're going to be talking about all kinds of things.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. Sorry, I'm making notes. Sorry.
It's okay. It's okay.
But it's like, I don't know. It's so much. So I guess we'll see what tomorrow brings. Like, I'm expecting the next dump to happen soon too.
Yeah.
The DOW. I mean, they're probably just waiting for after this conference to do something, drop more stuff and just see what's in there.
Yeah. Yeah. There's going to be, and you know, interestingly, we get into this in the second part, with our good friend Tom Reed.
Have fun talking about the DOW stuff. Yeah.
It's one of those, even of the 9 videos that were released in that second tranche, I want to say like 5 of them were in the Sleeping Dog documentary by Jeremy Corbell that came out before the second batch of videos came out. So it's one of those, like, a lot of this stuff, once again, has been out in the communities, out on YouTube channels for a long time, folks. It's not for us. It's to bring other people. If you want the rest of the world to have the conversation that you're having behind closed doors with your friends in the community, they need to have this conversation first. This is the conversation that brings them to that later conversation. They aren't going to understand why talking about mantids is important. If they don't understand why talking about a strange object in the sky and spending millions of dollars researching it is important to begin with, you know?
Yeah, exactly. We got to start somewhere. Everybody's got to start somewhere and everyone's at a different level. And so, you know, I don't know, just bringing more of the public in and educating them. And that's what all of these, you know, it's just like, it's a public education campaign.
It is.
It's like a theater. It's like watching theater in a way, watching it all unfold. It's almost like watching a play.
You know, it's interesting. Before the election, and I need to get a hold of the guy, a friend of mine from high school. Sorry that I never followed up with him, Kay. I'm just going to use her initial. But I was connected with a writer for WWE to specifically talk about how this is the political arena that we are living in now. This is the arena of dialogue that we are living in, is the dialogue of reality TV, is the dialogue of so you think Road Rules was reality TV and wasn't scripted. Interesting.
Right.
Interesting.
Yeah. No, but that's, you know, look, producer, I'm getting interviews on the news. Like, the news wants to talk about it more.
Exactly.
It's becoming more people's lives, and the more you make it a normal thing, like even talking about it, you know, sometimes people will be like, well, what do you do? You know, and I'm mostly a mom, and they're like, oh, is that it? Or you do anything else? And I'm always like, I investigate UFO. You know, you have to talk about it. Like, no one ever brings up the topic to me, but when you bring it up, then people will talk about it.
That's it.
It's an important topic. Bring it up. Talk to people.
Find out. They are more willing than ever, CJ.
I love it.
I want to thank you for coming on, especially in such emergency fashion tonight, to talk about this, to fill in the blanks, so to speak. But before we let you go, let everybody know where they can go to get involved. Let everybody know where they can go to find out more about Southern California MUFON, about MUFON and the MUFON Symposium.
Oh, God, all of it. We'll go to MUFON.com and their Facebook pages, too. There's a MUFON Facebook page. The Symposium has a Facebook page. But yeah, go here if you want to become a member, file a report, membership's like $6 a month or something like that. The basic membership, and you get the newsletter and stuff, and then get involved with your local chapter. Like, every state has a chapter and some cities have chapters. And that's like, I started off in Southern California MUFON. And that's our website there. And, you know, we have links, we have Zoom meetings. You can attend them pretty much anywhere. Going to get some in-person meetings going, but wherever you live, there's a meeting and you can get involved and find out and, come to a meeting or become a field investigator or whatever your interest is. But please do join, get active, follow us on Facebook, send us a message. And if you have a case, report it to MUFON. Like, that's the other thing I think about. There's so many people out there that have never reported what they saw. Like, go report what you saw to MUFON. And if you have evidence, great.
Yeah.
In photo, great.
And folks, just so you know, doesn't matter the year.
Yeah, it
doesn't matter the year. If you remember the year it happened, go make your report, because, you know, you would be surprised what pops up in the database in that kind of way, where, like, once another similar report pops up, they get flagged in that kind of way, where it's like, hey, this is related to something else.
I was able to find a match to a case, other witnesses seeing something, by simply typing UFO 1970s San Diego. And then I said, does this sound like what you saw? And she was like, that is exactly what I saw based on the description. So like, really, even if you're just like, it was in the mid 70s and this is what happened, this is what I remember. Like, it doesn't have to be specific. Just fill out the form the best you can. But even better, in the next month or so, they're going to have a new app and it's going to launch. It's going to be so much easier to report a UFO. So you can wait till then or start now on our old system. Be one of the last few on the OG MUFON system before the new app launches.
Absolutely. CJ, thank you always, honey, for your time. Take care.
Love you lots.
We'll be sending links, all that kind of good stuff.
Great.
Take care.
I'll take off. I'll click the leave button. Okay.
I'm leaving. All right. Man, always a great conversation. And once again, folks, I understand the fervor in the community. I understand the want of more than just a Folgers drip machine of data coming to you. But remember, we've been getting data and reams of data in this community for decades, We've been shooting flares in the air. We've been telling people this is just the beginning of the revolution of their tires. You can't let them burn their tires out before they actively get down the road. You know what I mean? They're going to get down the road to meet us for this conversation later. But you got to let them get the car moving. You got to let them get that going first. And that's what all of this is it really is the setup for a larger conversation. And it really is the setup for our government to, A, maybe set us up. I have a little more trust in us as a community than that. I think we will be ferreting those things out in real time as they happen, just like Tim Burchett was saying today, that, you know, these things happen and they don't happen in echo chambers. We see them happening and we are questioning why they're happening that way. So when we come back from this quick commercial break, everybody, we will be joined by our good friend Tom Reed. We will be talking about the Department of War documents that were just released, the second tranche of documents. We'll be getting into some of the videos that were released, and we will also briefly talk about his upcoming disclosure panel happening at the Roswell UFO Festival in Roswell, New Mexico over 4th of July weekend. All that and more with Tom Reed from The Know right after this.
The key to good science is good research. At the heart of good research is a good data set. With the field observation and encounter log from Curious Research, you can easily keep track of your investigative information all in one place, making it easier to review cases and readily see comparisons and contrasts between them. Whether out in the woods squatching, in a back room gathering EVPs, or using high-tech gear to track UFO UAP activity, this easy-to-carry, pocket-sized scientific data log is the perfect companion for any field researcher. You can find your copy of the Curious Research Field Observation and Encounter Log at Amazon.com or visit the official Curious Realm store at CuriousRealm.com/store to reserve your copy for yourself, your family, or a mind that you want to open. That website again is curiousrealm.com/store.
Well, hello, everybody, and welcome back from that quick commercial break. Thank you so much for hanging on through that with us. Also, thank you so much to our sponsors, especially True Hemp Science. If you're a user of CBD products like I am, stop on by TrueHempScience.com today. Christopher Lynch and True Hemp Science use a spigyric process where every part of the hemp plant is used, combusted, and reused. That is every part, stems, seeds, buds, leaves, roots, every part is used, combusted, and reused, and that process followed time and time again until nothing remains but an amazing spigyric product, complete with terpene profiles and all. Stop on by, check them out. TrueHempScience.com is the website that you want to go to. Curious7 is the code that you want to use to get 7% off your entire cart of $50 or more and get free edibles on the way out the door. Our guest in this segment is our good friend, Tom Reed. He is the host of the No podcast. You can find that on imdb.com. You can find that on his personal website, TomReedOfficial.com, as well as numerous other platforms. He is here tonight to talk about not only the cause of disclosure and disclosure as a whole and what the movement is all about that right now with these pursue documents that have been released, but also you are hosting a panel at the upcoming Roswell UFO Festival over July 4th weekend. You're hosting a disclosure panel, so we'll be getting into that a little bit. Welcome back to the show, Tom. How have you been?
Hey, Chris. Thank you so much, buddy. And I apologize for making this so difficult tonight.
Ah, that's all right. So, tech happens, busy, buddy. Tech happens.
Busy couple of days. I'm honored, actually, to be working with the museum and holding their disclosure panel. And if those who don't know, the Roswell Research Library opened their doors to a couple of attorneys that were looking for source documentation involving our family's incident about 11, 12 years ago, when the state, looked forward to doing something with our family's incident because of the impact it had locally. So I worked pretty closely with them on a lot of different levels, really. And so this year, I spoke to them and like, let's do it. And so, I'm grateful. And, so back to the government, man. I look at the government in a different way, right? Because I you have to really read between the lines sometimes. And sure, we're seeing these videos, and they're okay. Some of them are pretty good. I still think, the Nimitz, the Theodore Roosevelt, the jellyfish and
sure,
the Hellfire missile, all these are good videos. And what we're seeing now complements those. But I don't know if I've seen anything that really, outweighs them, where I go, wow, right? Because I've seen more of my own two eyes than what we're getting. And then you have to look at the government has always really in some way been deceptive. I mean, oh, we're not keeping, anything from the general public, right? We're not investigating UFOs. And yet, you got ATIB and Arrow and all these other companies or, divisions within our government, right? That have secretly been doing just the opposite of what they've been telling us. So when they introduce these videos, and they've got much better than this, or they wouldn't be, backing these or paying for these other gray budgeted, subcategories of official categorized, right, UAP or UFO, programs. So there's a lot more out there. And so the trickle that we're seeing right now, the the videos. There is one, though. There was one that I really did kind of like. I also liked the one about the submarine, too, by the way, where the sub was out in the middle of nowhere. So it wasn't like those drones were being, controlled by land, right? But the one that I think stood out to me was the rapid acceleration video. Now, that one also has come under scrutiny where you've probably heard a lot of people say, well, the camera was focused on the thing and then it couldn't turn anymore. And so it looked like it shot away. That's not true either, because the entire clip would have blurred, not the one object. Right. So if that were the situation, no. So that was an active, independent UAP or vessel or object, which accelerated incredibly quickly on its own. That was not a camera type of issue. And then if you look at it earlier, while it was not too far off land and going through the, the windmills or whatever that was, you can see how quickly it could maneuver and go left, right, up, down, what have you. So we are getting enough information that can back up or solidify some of the other ones that we've seen.
Sure.
But I'm not seeing anything that has really wowed me, if that makes sense.
No, it makes perfect sense, Tom. And I'll tell you why. I've said it on numerous shows that I've guested on. I've said it on this show for a while. And that is the fact that these files are not for us. The hearings that are happening are not for us. They are for people like you who experienced firsthand craft. They are not for researchers who have been in these waters for decades, things like that. That's not who they're for. Most of the videos that were released in this second tranche, I want to say there were like 9 videos, something like that, amongst the new files that were there. And out of those 9, 5 of them were in the recent Jeremy Corbell Sleeping Dog documentary.
Anyway,
but yeah, before these documents were released, before the second tranche of them that included those videos were out. So a lot of these were already out in the community. You know,
it's soft launch. It was a soft launch.
What they've done is cull a bunch of stuff together so that the average person, like researchers, know how to file a FOIA request. We know where to go to find these things. We know about people like John Greenwald and the Black Vault. Good God, sure. He's been assembled. He has. You think this is a tranche, folks? Feel free to marry your way through his like 100 terabytes of files and videos and audio.
Right.
You know, all he does is file FOIA requests all day long and post the documents. So, and one of the things I've brought up regularly, I just said this on Jeremy Scott's Into the Paranormal a couple weeks ago. Never once, and you can look it up. Here it is from Google AI, just so you're aware, folks. But never once has the CIA, when taken to task, when asked by Congress about a black project or, you know, something like that, never once have they told the truth the first time around, ever.
No, that's kind of my point. Like I'm sorry. But yeah, we're talking about videos and we're going, you know, it's pretty cool, I guess. It's like a little bit of this. A little bit of this, a little bit of that. But like you said, this is nothing compared to what they have. And we know what they have because we know what we have.
Yeah.
Right? And so this is like nothing. And yet it also contradicts their own verbiage, what they've told us in the past. So why should we believe them now?
Yeah.
And like you said, if they really wanted some, you know, even we can go, like you said, you know, the Black Vault itself has more than this.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
In some ways.
I mean, Curious Realm, my knowledge vault on my website has more documents than what's been put together in the first 2 releases. You know, but what's interesting is that it has opened a conversation, Tom.
Sure.
And that's what I love about all of it, period. Because what the only way that you get to capital D disclosure, the big disclosure, is by choking purse strings. That's the only way you get that is legal means. You know, that's why we're having hearings. 'Cause if we can have people, like the whistleblower who came forward and said it was my job to follow the money. And when I followed the money to the door, they slammed it in my face.
Yeah.
You know, the more of those we can get, the better. And eventually, maybe we will get an Ollie North who has to stand up and say, hey, you know, yeah, I was in charge of the black budget program, and this is what we did, you know.
And everybody likes to jump on us, too. You know, conspiracies this, conspiracies that. But the cover-up has been proven, right?
Yeah.
The paper trail exists. The groups exist. The money exists.
Yep.
So it's no longer a conspiracy. We were right.
Yeah, yeah.
And but is the government ever going to do the right thing? Are they ever going to really come clean? And I don't think so. I think it's going to be enough to keep the reporters quiet, enough to distract other issues that are happening right now or will be happening soon. It's a great topic to get people focused on something. And you know, they do that all the time. You know what I'm talking about. But at the same time, though, you know, you got to give credit to Tim Burchett. You got to give credit to, you know, there is this is a good time.
Yep.
Right. It's just there's still the brakes are still put on. There's still those hurdles. And in short, it's we're getting somewhere. And it's, you know, there is proof that we're not alone, but there always has been. But now it's like you said, or we discussed earlier, it's kind of a soft launch. But maybe that's still enough for now. Maybe we've come a long way in the last 30 or 40 years, for sure.
We have come a massive way since 2016, 2017, when we first saw the videos from Lou Elizondo. You know, that's really the what we have always put down as the launch point for this conversation. Yeah. Like that and the articles by Leslie Keene, stuff like that.
Our case was formally and officially inducted as historically true, and that happened in 1969.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So, but once again, I think your case, much like numerous cases out there, Tom, there are some that made huge acclaim, you know, Betty and Barney Hill, Travis Walton, things like that. But most cases of abduction and close encounter of the third kind in that kind of way, don't really make major headline beyond their regional area. And yours was definitely still in that time where like we did, unless it made major national news in some kind of way, you know, we weren't connected with the internet like we are now, where like, good God, you're hearing, I'm down here in Texas hearing about mass Bigfoot sightings in Ohio that are all over the news, like national news, major Bigfoot sightings in Ohio. It's like, how is that national news now?
But yeah, it's almost like the news is almost entertainment television. It's like news is almost its own, right? It's its own reality TV show, you know.
But y'all's case is a great example, truly, of one that was known there in a region and became known on a national level later. Because once again, yours is the only case that's recognized by the UN. Yeah. In the kind of way
that it happened in a small town in the Berkshires, and then it got overshadowed by the Hudson River Valley sightings, which we went in support of. But yeah, you're right. I mean, back in the day, it was hard to be heard. And you know, you bring up a good point, though. I'm sure there's a lot more cases. I'm sure there's a lot more cases that deserve to be heard that will come forward now, because if they happened in the 70s, 80s, or whatever, before everyone had a computer on their desk at home, or even a cell phone that could, you know, was a computer in itself, these people may now feel more comfortable to come out. And if they've got a news clipping or they've got something, I do think that this is going to continue to generate and fuel more interest and more, you know, more accounts that happened, like you said, before the computer age. So that's a good thing. And the reporters now are going to not have the rolling of the eyes like they did, or, you know, and then when they go to work the next day, their coworkers are like, did you see that? You know, or did you hear that guy? He must be nuts. I don't know about the religion thing either. I don't personally think it's going to affect a religion in any way. I mean, God didn't limit himself to earth, right? So, you know, let's face it. You know, I've always said, you know, we've got 9 million species here after 5 global extinctions. I mean, something's going on. Come on, you know?
Yeah.
But anyway, I back to the images, right? The release of the video footage. I still think there's a couple good ones in there.
Sure.
You know, I don't know what to make of the star looking thing. That was interesting. Could that have been gas? But let me mention something else too. AI Atlas, right?
Yeah.
I always said that I thought the comet had a lot of parasite. It's like a stone that's like a space dust. It looks like peridot. And I thought, well, if that was covering the comet, and it probably very well would have, because it was so many millions and billions of years old, right? That it would have had the gases would not have been what we normally see from a comet that doesn't have that covering, right? And I thought, well, maybe that's why. But we have seen so many back-to-back anomalies, if you will, that when you couple them together, I mean, it's undeniable. You know, you've got we've proved that we can prove right now that our government has been lying to us.
Oh, yeah.
Repeatedly. The videos coming out are not a big deal, but it's still enough. Then you've got what we already know, what's already circulated, what's, you know, the Tic Tac and all those. I mean, when you look at this as a whole, it's obvious. But there's still, when are they going to release that one where we go, told you?
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and, you know, I have held since the first hearing that happened on Capitol Hill with all of this, Tom, that you will not see on the floor of Congress like somebody wheel out a gurney with a sheet and give you the aha moment, like, wham, here's the body, you know, like in a tube. That's not going to happen in that kind of way. Once again, we may get, some video footage. We may get that kind of stuff, but, much like with Bigfoot or anything like that, a video or a photo is not the actual hard evidence in that kind of way. You know, like
it would have been 20 years ago.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Man. And that's just it. Now we are talking about realms of technology that are out there used by our government. I just posted, I don't know if it wasn't today when this recording was made, Tom, that I put the multiple kill vehicle video up, from Lockheed Martin. And that was like 2000, something like that. Late 1990s, that they had this thing that was about the size of my desk here that flew up, down, left, right, all kinds of stuff, and was made for autonomous kill, you know, that kind of thing out in the battlefield, like one of the first drone concepts. And that was 1990s. We were talking about that technology, you know, that was well being tested in labs.
Yeah.
That kind of stuff. Even now we have the patents for nuclear reactors that go into F-16 platforms. So you're talking about something the size of a small car engine that's a nuclear reactor, you know, like the size of your home refrigerator, something like that. That's wild.
Never have to gas up your car again. Yeah. Hey, let me ask, right? Run forever. Buy one of these, right? Let me ask you something. Do you think that the solidifying visitation would be the biggest story in human history? And if so, do you think the confirmation of that is perhaps what is sparring in the background? Like, I want to be the one to release that. That should come from us. That's national security. Who's ahead of national security right now? Do you think that just throwing out videos and saying, look, you know, we we know we're not alone, but we're still not truly accepting or validating or assuring the general public that we know who's operating said crafts, what have you.
Yeah.
Because, you know, announcing visitation as a real thing, you know, that's a high road to take. And that's a big thing to admit to. So maybe that's part of it.
And that's just it. You know, once again, the idea of who in the last hearing, George Knapp made a very, very cogent point. And that was kudos to all of these contractors, Lockheed, Bass, Bigelow Aerospace. Kudos to all of them. They have taken high technology on behalf of our government and squirreled it away as they were asked to. And they have kept the secret as they were at, no different than the people that worked at Los Alamos and the people that worked at a plant in Alabama building triggers for friggin' hydrogen bombs. They had no idea what they were making on a Wednesday afternoon as the stuff strolled across the assembly line. It was compartmentalized. They had no idea. Most of the people handling these materials, things like that, have no idea. They are part of a huge machine and just a cog in it, and they get to work with some wild exotic material. So,
yeah, with no clue whatsoever what they're working on.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So it's one of those, like he said, kudos to the contractors that are doing that. Good on those guys, because they have been able to keep those secrets. But at the same token, he's like, I bet that right now they are looking for an on-ramp to bring other people in to collaborate, because scientifically you can only exist inside of that box for so long before you can't expand the knowledge anymore. You've got to have competing thought. You've got to have people from outside of the circle to like the Have Blue program is a great example, you know, of how competition helps science grow. So imagine,
and it's all compartmentalized.
Yeah.
And you
yeah.
have to have access to that. And it's run by black budgets.
Yep.
So, yeah, you know, it's to get what we have thus far, I think was quite monumental. A milestone. Yeah, it was.
Monumental.
Even to get this, because that proves that there's been an interest and there's money spent. If there's money spent,
exactly.
Then there's a reason for it. And it's been going on for a long time. And it's not one department, it's two or three. Yeah. And, you know, so nobody in government is going to spend money on something that for no reason. And you got to know NASA's known what's going on for a very long time, because we've been giving them billions of dollars too. So come on, you know, it's common sense at this point.
Well, and they at the very least had some knowledge about some things. They at the very least, and even the stuff that was brought forth from NASA in these documents, not a whole lot of strange stuff, not a whole lot of things beyond that haven't
but again,
been
NASA's controlled by U.S. government. And if they say too much, they won't get their money next year.
Well, and, you know, most people don't realize, like, I've got the Space Shuttle Operator's Manual on the shelf behind me, because that's the kind of proper nerd I am. But when you start looking at all of those STS launches, all the shuttle transit system, you don't really realize how many of them are DOD classified till you start looking at that. Most of them were. They did not get their instructions till they were in orbit. They knew that they were going to do satellite maintenance or release a satellite or something like that, but they had no idea what all of that was until they got up there. They did some basic trainings, some, hey, you're going to swap a board out like this, and this is what it's going to look like, you know? But aside from that, most of those, like, that's why they pull their pilots from military programs. You know, not until recently have we had astronauts that were commercial pilots in that kind of way.
Who else do you think operates outside congressional oversight? I mean, where do you think the breaks are coming from?
Well, I mean, I think there are most contractors are operating outside of congressional oversight. When things, and it's very interesting, because one of the things that I bring up all the time is that, and this is kind of a side thought, but adjunct as well, folks, just so you understand how these alphabet agencies work and the leniency and leeway which they are given. After the Church Committee hearings, which is where we found out about MK Ultra, MK Artichoke, the assassination program, it's where we found out about Operation Mockingbird, all kinds of stuff from the CIA. And after that, there was a law passed saying that the federal government could not experiment on members of the American public. Unless, there's the key word, unless it has to do with national security. And like as soon as national security is brought up, whoop, out the door, the law goes.
Everything changes. Everything changes. Right. Everything.
So right.
That's all you got to do is say it's a matter of national
matter
security.
Of and national
it's over.
Security. And it's over with. The questions are stopped. And suddenly your purview utterly changes. And what you're allowed to do utterly changes. What you're, and the prime example is the MK Ultra documents that were just taken from Tulsi Gabbard's office, because she was getting ready for an MK Ultra hearing, like a secondary one, a second one.
I hope she made copies.
And the CIA literally came into her office and removed those documents. And people are like, how are they able to do that? And I'm like, is it a matter of national security? Because if it is, those documents belong to them first.
See, that's the other thing, too. The vice president, the president, you know, these departments, they are ahead of those departments, but they are not the top dog.
They are not need to know.
And that's just it. Like, who are the top dogs? I mean, as of right now, just in what we're seeing or not seeing with respect to the conversation at hand here, UFOs, if you will, UAPs, alone tells you that what we think is the typical food chain is not the food chain.
That's right. That's right. And that's just it. What is there and what most people think is the operations and the way it works is a veneer. That is a sexy covering that looks real silky and nice. Underneath that, it is filthy, it is dirty, it is grimy, and there are major cogs that fit together and move together, Tom, to make things happen and to make these things happen in the dark. And to make them happen in a way that, you know, once again, we through courses of national security, we do things like Abu Ghraib, you know, that kind of stuff. Where it's like, no, we don't have torture, but hey, you know, if we have an extended interrogation program, that's different, you know.
And the FBI is just puppets too. I mean, we're firing people left and right, and just you know, so that's not a big deal. But you don't see that happening with national security. Anything, just like, so when it comes down to it, That's where the ball stops.
It does. It does. And it always does. And when
there's got to be departments underneath that, you know, that control this, that, and if they have a problem, they control, you know, they call this department. Maybe we should look into that more. And who's who, and, you know.
Yeah, the literal onion layers that are there to these things. And that's just it. When you're talking compartmentalization, when you're talking black budgets, when you're talking about things like the National Defense Authorization Act, where the money for black budgets comes from, stuff like that, that's where all of this comes to a head, truly. And when it comes to disclosure, when it comes to files, videos, audio, photos, all that kind of stuff, once again, yes, we know the government has troves more than what they have released, right now, this is basically a slow release of things, because otherwise it's way too much. Even a prime example of that would be the JFK documents. Whenever they came out, it was just an overwhelming amount of data, Tom. Overwhelming amount of data, you know, to where it's almost detrimental to the cause to release such a wave of data in that kind of way, because the average person reading it won't be able to digest all of it, as opposed to releasing it in small tranches like they're doing here, where it's like, here's the first part, and then a few weeks later, here's the second part, you know, here's the third part. Now, that I'm not saying that they aren't keeping stuff from us. I guarantee you they are.
Yep. Oh, absolutely. There's no question.
But,
you know, but for me, the lie itself is the story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And when you start looking at and considering how these things, A, affect the community to begin with, and affect people onboarding into the community. I found it very interesting, and I've brought this up a couple times in other broadcasts, that the first document, the very first PDF out of the first tranche was an individual who belonged to a now defunct UFO investigation organization. And he sent a letter to J. Edgar Hoover telling him, I am a member of this organization. This is what we do. This is what we are about. It's a scientific group endeavoring to look into this stuff. We have a once a year symposium. This is what we talked about this year. I just want you to know, on paper, I am not a communist. I don't want you to call me a communist because I'm looking into this. Like, this was the first document that they released, was literally the government, like somebody writing the government and saying, please don't, you know, call me crazy and call me these things and make this into me being a communist and discredit me in my life, in my livelihood, in my neighborhood. Don't defame me, you know. So it's interesting that was the first one. When that's been the commonplace thing since the beginning.
So what do you think we're going? I suspect there'll be another wave of videos coming out.
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah.
Right? Out of those, maybe, you know, a handful will be somewhat informative. But if they're releasing the amount that they are, and it's not like we're getting one or two. I mean, there is a wave of stuff coming out.
Yeah.
Can you imagine how much they have? Oh. And who is actually determining or making that determination on who or what releases this stuff, and who's it actually coming from, and who's the one going, well, we can't show this one, but we can release that one.
Yeah.
Has that person or that department that is releasing these, I know it's coming from the Pentagon, but does anyone actually, do they know who this person is or who these group of people are?
Well, at the beginning, it was Arrow, Tom, who we found out
but
Kilpatrick was a full-on PSYOP plant. You know, so yeah, it's because once again, you know, they form an organization within the government to do this stuff. And imagine that it's being used for nefarious purposes from the jump, you know, and that's just it. It's one of those, like, for conspiracists out there, you aren't making it extraordinarily hard.
Well, what concerns me and where I'm going with this and what is going on in my head is that if this is a way to get people to go, I knew we weren't alone. These are the files we've been looking for. You know, thank God we finally have them. And then later on come to find out that there's already this this idea or this plan in place to say, well, we finally figured out what this was. This was a hoax. This was a drone. This was, and then all of a sudden the topic looks like it's foolish again. So why not, if you're really going to release something and say, look, you know, we're doing what was asked of us. Here you go. Give us something that we can go, nice. Not a white blimp, something flying across the water that was taken in infrared, right? Or if it's locked on with a fighter jet with a camera and a whole bit, that's pretty cool. That shows that it's a physical object.
Sure.
But at the same time, you've got these missiles, the fact we're flying, you know, a $20,000 missile, you know, into a balloon, let's say. I mean, that just goes to show you how basically stupid the person is to fire at that, right? Because that's a lot of money to be wasted on a friggin' balloon, right?
Yeah.
So, and if it is bouncing off the balloon, then I would want my money back. But I don't think that shot, you know which one I'm talking about? I can't think of the name of it. Which one was that?
No, it was the Tomahawk.
Hellfire missile.
Yeah, the Hellfire. It was the Hellfire missile. Hellfire.
Right. Okay. So a lot of people say that was a balloon. But then again, look at the amount of money that went in to taking that balloon out. If that was a balloon and we've got lenses and cameras that can zoom in, would we really be spending that kind of money on a missile to shoot down a balloon that might be worth, what, $500? So it doesn't make sense. That also reflects on the decision making in itself. So I don't think that was any balloon. And you saw the rocket bounce off of it. I know something you probably think it was too, but if you look at the rocket that hit it, it actually was, thrown off course.
It deflected.
990 miles an hour, well, and thrown off course. Right?
Granted, what you have to remember is that there's two versions of that missile.
Okay.
One of them is used for kinetic use, like what we used to take out the terrorist in his car. Ooh. It wasn't an explosive round. It's actually just weighted, and it has large blades. It's called the RX-9 Ninja. The Hellfire RX-9 Ninja, and it's got large blades that come out. And the idea is that its weight, its speed, and the area tear through the object. So you still have recoverable things, stuff like that. So,
but it didn't tear through it. It didn't.
It clipped the edge of it and spun around. So it didn't hit the object. It came close to it. The edge of the wing clipped it, and it spun around. That's just physics.
It hit it, though.
It didn't hit it. It clipped it.
I think it did.
So, and
it looks like it hit it to me.
And there is.
And then parts of the other object came off.
Yep.
Right.
Yep. The Houthi drone.
So there was an impact.
The Houthi drone is.
If it just glanced, that you wouldn't have debris. Right.
And it. Let me find an image of the Houthi drone here, because there is one specifically that is a Ring model.
Okay.
Where it is a large ring with another ring that hangs below it that protects the warhead in the middle. It's basically made to drop a bomb, and it's a ring with the propeller on top and then a ring on the bottom, connected by four pieces of metal that come down.
Okay.
And that's what the drone hit, is the piece of metal. And that's what you see fly off and fall down, is the supportive piece of metal that holds the secondary ring on.
So what are you saying the debris is then?
The debris is part of the drone that the missile actively hit.
So when it clipped
the drone,
no balloon. You think it was a drone?
Yeah, yeah. And we broke this down pretty well with Mike Turber on the show, and went through frame by frame and showed the Houthi drone.
Yeah, I looked at it too, and I don't know. I'm still,
but
not convinced.
But it's still one of those fully explainable. Once again, either way you look at it, whether it's a balloon, whether what have you. Still fully explainable by the ordinance that we have, all kinds of things. So, and the fact is, you're trying to hit an airborne object with a missile that is not made for air-to-air combat. It's made to hit a static object on the ground or an object moving on the ground.
Yeah, it's an impact.
Not in the air.
However,
Missiles that are made to hit something in the air never actually hit the target. They explode near the target so that it's hit by a cloud of shrapnel and fully taken out.
It has to be an impact.
So it doesn't impact the target to explode the missile. The missile explodes near the target in proximity. So
then what causes the missile to explode in the proximity then? Just so
that's radar, all kinds of things inside the missile that's actually measuring the distance to the object. But whenever you're using something like the RX-9 Ninja, you're typically using it on a ground-borne target, a tank, something like that.
Yeah, well, you know, a solid object's a solid object wherever it is.
Oh, absolutely.
And if it did hit something, it should have ignited, it should have exploded. Or if even it was near the object, which would be a drone.
The RX-9 has no explosive capability. It's a kinetic round only. It uses only its own weight and inertia to go through the target. It has no explosive capability on it whatsoever. There is no explosive warhead on RX-9.
So it's like Hellfire missile. They shot a dud.
Well, they're basically shooting something that was... They're trying to maintain whatever they're trying to knock down, basically. They don't want to destroy the object. They want to examine the object, which is why they're trying to hit it with something kinetic instead of blow it the fuck up. So, logically, it makes sense to hit it with something kinetic so you can knock it down. Get pieces you can examine. If you hit it with an explosive round, it's just going to be destroyed. You have nothing left to examine at that point.
Okay, so when it was broken apart, what happened to that?
It was still flying. It was still going. We didn't see the rest of the footage after that.
So if it was a drone and we hit it and it broke into three pieces and it still went on its way.
Yep.
So was it really a drone?
We don't know, but that's the question, and that's just it. But it's also the fact of fully explainable, like you said,
there's a lot of different ways you could look at it. You know, that is a solid and a credible way to look at what happened. But you know, I don't know. I'm still not convinced that was just ours.
Oh no, it wasn't ours. No, the only thing ours in that situation was the platform observing it and the RX-9 that was fired, the RX-9 Ninja missile. That was it.
So what do you think the drone was?
Whether we were trying to gather enemy intelligence, what have you, who knows? Something, because that's what came out during the big drone hearings that happened was, regardless, even if it's regular drones, there is obviously something out there, and even with regular drones, that we cannot detect all of these. We can't. There are numerous drone platforms out there that we have no means whatsoever of detection.
So it's not ours, but you think you're disputing that it's off-world, let's say.
Yeah. Contractors, don't forget, like Lockheed sells to other nations as well. Numerous companies sell to other nations.
And you know how far that was out to sea.
And these things get big. Like drones get big. They get like the size of Mini Coopers.
Oh, sure. But this wasn't like just offshore. This was in the middle of the ocean.
Sure, sure.
So if it's a drone that's ours, you know, can you imagine what the battery would have to be like to get that thing to go to where it is? And if that's the case, then it wouldn't have the power to carry a 12-volt car battery. So then now you've got to ask yourself, then if that's the case to your argument, then what powered it? Because that has come a long way.
Well, I mean, we have numerous packages that can power such things, nuclear batteries, like what we use in satellites, all kinds of stuff. Even the idea of wireless drones, the idea of there is no RF controlling it to like take down with a microwave weapon or something like that. It's being controlled by pre-programmed fiber optic. things like that, where it actively has a camera on board. It can recognize where it's going, like Google Map.
Oh, yeah. And, well, we've had that forever.
And it's not receiving instructions from a flight operator.
Okay, so my argument then is, like, first of all, we spent a lot of money to fire something at it to take it down. Mm-hmm. Some people say it was a balloon. Some things, like, your position is that it was a drone.
Sure.
But at the same time, it had to come from somewhere. And if it's moving like it is, and it was moving at a good clip, and it was big and it was pretty good size, then, you know, if it is ours or it is not off-world, then something had to be powering that thing that's got a battery life of like weeks, because it was out in the middle of nowhere. And, you know, who would make that? Who would have the technology to do that? And if it's nuclear powered, then you got to ask yourself, what organizations can play with nuclear powered, you know, drones and weapons? I mean, that ought to be a quick find, right? I mean, there's not that many companies out there that can actually legally by what they need to put together nuclear powered drones.
Sure, sure. It would be a small cadre of folk, most definitely. I'm just saying that the technology is out there.
It is. So yeah. What we hear about now has been done, you know, or made packaged 20 years ago.
Like stealth is the prime example of that. The first stealth models flew back in the 1970s. We did not physically hear about them until 20 years later.
Right.
So that,
and one of the reasons that happens too is that a lot of these planes, they're not they're not made or stored on military bases. They're in independent, privately owned areas, so that there's no way that they can be forced to relinquish that information.
Exactly. Right. It's kind of like in Iron Man 2, where they're trying to get him to relinquish the Iron Man suit. And he's like, what weapon? I don't have a weapon. I have a prosthetic. I got a personal prosthetic, but I don't have a weapon. I don't know what you're talking about. You know, kind of the same kind of thing.
Where, yeah,
because verbiage. Because it's, well, and it, because it's held by a private contractor, it wasn't built with government money. It wasn't built with government funds in that kind of way. It doesn't belong to the government.
Right.
So
exactly.
And that makes it harder too, right?
This makes it harder to make sense of what we're doing, what we're talking about, even this conversation, when you know that there's so many other factors that play into this.
Yeah.
You're like, well, here we are spending all this money to shoot down this thing, and we don't even know where it's coming from, who could possibly own it, who made it. It's operating in a way that we don't make these things, but that doesn't mean someone else does. And then for it to be way out in the middle of the ocean, well, geez, you know, usually a drone has to be within so many feet. It only has an hour's worth of battery life or power, right? So you're like, okay, well, this is odd. Let's shoot it down, just to come to find out that maybe it was friggin', you know, manufactured or made right there in Dubai, for whatever we know.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And that's just it. When it comes to these programs, when it comes to this data, that's why I say we will likely not see disclosure as most people are looking for it. What we're going to see is the disclosure that we're getting, which is, yes, soft baby D disclosure, but still shows the fact that, and once again, for average people, not for people in the communities that are hardcore researchers like we are, Tom, people like you who have had your experiences in life, things like that. These are not for us. They're for the average person for whom this is a non-conversation, to show them why it should be a conversation. Because it's obviously been a conversation with the government for decades, to the tune of billions of dollars.
Yeah. And this brings up another, you know, to your point, really, if we are discussing, and we are to a degree, real UAP disclosure, then maybe Congress should also be including, hey, look, this is also what we're seeing out there. You know, other countries are playing with this type of power element.
Yeah.
So-and-so is now playing with a certain, you know, radioactive power source that's the size of a pack of cigarettes, let's say. Because to really disclose anything truthfully, you've got to have all the parts or all the different pieces of this puzzle so you can rule out this or rule that out too, right? The general public, like you said, those just are hairdressers or lawn care, vehicle maintenance, what the general public, they're not going to also understand that there are all these other power sources that are being made by third world countries, if you will, or even Russia, or even ourselves. And how this gets hidden by our own government, if you will, because a lot of these, if you are ordering hypothetically, you're playing with anything nuclear, right? Any a plasma, anything, right? There's licensing that goes into that. There's an awful lot of oversight in that alone.
Absolutely.
So if that's the case, then again, we should be able to track that down, but we wouldn't know until we shoot it down, like you said, without maybe blowing the thing to pieces, because if we can extract or get something out of the sea, maybe there's something that would, indicate to us as to where it came from. And then we can look at these nuclear powered drones that you just showed up there, because again, there's only so many people that have legally could do that.
Absolutely.
There's channels they've got to abide by. There's safety regulation, right? Yeah. All that kind of stuff.
Yeah, precisely. And once again,
and if that's the case, what was it doing in the middle of the ocean?
Yeah, that patent that I just popped up was 1988. Just so you're aware, 1988, we were talking about nuclear powered drones. So that's once again, technology that has been out there for a long time. So,
I thought too that when we had all those drone sightings over New Jersey and the whole bit, I was thinking to myself too, well, maybe we didn't shoot them down because somebody knows either they're ours or they're nuclear powered. And if we shoot it down and it lands in the children's schoolyard, we're screwed.
Exactly. Not just that, man. If you're talking about something big enough, you're talking about a good, even if it's just lithium, you're talking about a good couple pounds of lithium battery for something that's gonna have a military or industrial application, where you're talking about observation drones used for 12-hour stretches out in pipeline fields, things like that, that are observing pipelines, looking for CO2 leaks, that kind of stuff. Yes, they have 12-20 hour lifespans on their battery. They're huge, 3-4 pound lithium batteries.
Yeah,
so if you shot that and it caught fire and landed in a neighborhood, you're talking about a massive toxic
area. You've got to have one power of a drone to carry around 5 pounds of battery.
Yeah.
that's what I was saying too. What they shot at was in the middle of the friggin' ocean.
Yeah. Yeah.
But once again, 7-8 hours just to get to where it was.
Yeah, but you don't necessarily want to shoot it with an explosive missile if it might be nuclear powered. That's that wouldn't be smart.
Well, the other thing too,
nothing is fissionable.
With anything, you got to be careful.
Dirty, because,
That's
just it. That's just it. It's one of those. We have to be willing to look at all of this with the realm of common sense. We have to be able to look at why the files that have been released are being released the way they are with some kind of realm of common sense. And by looking at it from the point of view of those who have not been onboarded to the topic, when you look at it from that, this is the biggest conversation that our government has been willing to have in a long time. And it's pretty impressive that they're even willing to have it on this level, Tom,
Yeah. And you look at even this conversation about what it was and where could it come from. They had that discussion too, I'm sure, before they fired at it.
Oh, guaranteed.
And because there's so many different, possibilities, at one point you got to say, do we fire at it or not? And then someone's got to make that decision to go, yep, and hit the button and fire the missile at it.
Yeah.
And that's a risk too.
Which is a whole different form of gumption, like quite literally, where it's like, I don't know, man, let's find out. We're all going to find out together right now. Go ahead. Operational clearance given, So, and that's just it. This is the conversation right now. This is the conversation that's going to be happening amongst the all-star panel that you have assembled for the upcoming disclosure panel at the UFO Festival, at Roswell UFO Festival in Roswell over 4th of July weekend. Let's spend the last couple minutes talk about that real quick, hype that up a little bit. Who all is going to be there right now, Tom? Who
do you know? So as of right now, I had Congressman Tim Burchett confirmed back in January, but you know, it is a 250th anniversary of our independence and this kind of thing. So he has other obligations in and or around Washington. Darcy Weir.
Nice.
Yeah, he is going to zoom in and give his opinion and certainly talk a little bit about Canada and how things are a little bit different there. I've old friends with the drummer from the band Dokken, BJ Zampa. He's also agreed to call in. He also had a UFO experience, and so did his friend. And they were both around the Berkshires, which is my backyard. That's how I know them from when I was younger, in my 20s, and so on and so forth. So he's going to zoom in. And then I've got a call into Sheehan, you know, the attorney, Danny Sheehan.
Yep.
And not confirmed yet. And God, there's so many other people, too, that I've reached out to. Possibly James Fox. So we haven't locked everyone down yet. It's a busy weekend. That's the problem. It's the 4th of July. Some are doing things with their family. You know, I spoke to Avi Loeb. He was going to do it, but he's going to be in Athens, Greece that weekend. So he was going to try to come in earlier. I'm still trying to work out a possible time slot for him, which where we could get him in, maybe where it's 11 o'clock his time, which would mean we'd have to call him in around 2 o'clock rather than 4 when it actually starts. So I'm playing with a lot of numbers. I'm playing with a lot of little hurdles here, but there's a few other people, you know, that I've got on the back burner. I'm trying to see if I can move our panel up a couple hours, but then again, I think they really want to wrap up the entire weekend with it. So, but then you'll be there. Mark D'Antonio will be there. He's going to be, you know, from NASA's Unexplained Files and so on and so forth. Awesome. We talked about him earlier. Possibly Ben Hansen. He's going to be at the museum, but I haven't formally invited him to be on the panel yet. So at this point, we're in the early stages of locking it down. So Samuel Chung is also an attorney. He was going to possibly zoom in too and talk about how ufology and or UFOs are viewed and looked at in Asia.
Mm.
And you know, Asia is even more protective of this topic than the U.S. is.
Yeah.
And so anyway, you know, you'll be there, of course. You know,
absolutely.
And you'll be part of the panel as well. So anyway, that's what I have so far. There's more, but, you know, I'm not really sure who's going to do what. Here's the thing, right? So I only had an hour at first. Now I've got 2 hours.
Oh,
so right.
All right.
Right. So now it's 4 to 6 instead of 4 to 5, 4 to 5:30. Now it's 4 to 6.
Okay.
So we've got 2 full hours to fill. Right. So.
Well, cool. I can't wait. It's going to be great. Yeah. Last year was my first year at Roswell UFO Festival. This year will be my family's first year to go. And I think it will probably just be a family trip every year that we make at the beginning of summer with my kid. It's just so much fun. It's a great event. I can't wait to see everybody. I can't wait to see you there. Tom, always great catching up. It's always great talking with you off air. All kinds of things. Before we let you go, let everybody know where they can go to catch up with their episodes of The Know, where they can go to watch all of that, everything else.
Right. All right. Well, The Know is on right now. It's really only on Rumble because YouTube kind of shadow banned us. But it's The Know or No TV with Tom Reed on Rumble. As far as the UFO part goes or anything to do with the Berkshire's UFO, and I'm going to clarify a lot of that, too, because the Berkshire's UFO is my family's incident. And I'm going to be talking about a lot of that and how it kind of got rebranded. But you can go to berkshiresufo.com or ufopark.org, and you can really see what the Berkshire's UFO incident is truly about, and even see some behind the scenes of some of the filming that have taken place there. There you go. Yep. And with that, if you want to reach me personally, you can reach me at Tom Reed. tomreedofficial@gmail.com, tomreedofficial@gmail.com. And I try to get back to everybody. So it is one of those nights. My phone has been going crazy. I'm getting distracted with this thing between my car's been in the shop. Everyone's like, hey, Tom, do you want it? I was invited to the Indianapolis 500 and I blew that off. So now they want to do things with me this weekend. Yeah, because I just got out of surgery. I'm like 2 days after my rehabilitation from surgery. So,
Yeah.
See, my phone is still going. It's like nonstop. But anyway, guys, Chris, thank you so much for having me and I appreciate it. And you're always, fun to talk with because thanks, you see brother. Things in a very technical way. And I appreciate that. And hopefully we will get some answers. And I look forward to your participating in this disclosure panel. I think you have a lot to offer, too. So I'm really looking forward. You should just sit up there with us. All right. Yeah. Oh, by the way, I heard that there's going to be some changes in people coming this year. So there's going to be a lot of new faces this year at the Roswell.
Yeah, it's going to be great.
Festival and or the International UFO Museum.
Yeah. Absolutely. Tom. Thank you so much, as always. Hold the line real quick while we close things out with the audience.
Well, let me mention one more thing.
Go.
Okay. So I don't know. This is the name of the person that I'm not sure is going to be there, but he's been offered to headline, and that is Dean Haglund.
Oh, wow.
I haven't got an answer yet, but I'm really hoping that he takes us up on it. So, again, cool. Right. That'd be kind of cool.
Well, Tom, once again. Always a pleasure, my friend. While you are online, everybody, checking out everything from Tom Reed and the No podcast over at TomReedOfficial.com. Make sure to stop on by Curious Realm. CuriousRealm.com is where you can like, follow, subscribe. That is where you can find all of the knowledge vault that we have at CuriousRealm.com/knowledge, ton of declassified documents, as well as your links to Curious Research, all of the stuff we were talking about tonight, all of the videos from the Pursue Files, all of the audio photos. You can find nice, easy documents where you can download, get a description, and a direct link to that content. Right there at CuriousResearch.org, folks. Just go to the Research tab and visit the Pursue, the Department of War Pursue UFO Files. That will take you there. Thank you so much, as always, everybody, for your open hearts, your open minds. That is what makes the conversation. And without the conversation, humanity does not march forward. So remember, take care of yourselves. Take care of each other and stay curious. We'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning into this episode of The Curious Realm. Stay tuned for more guests, forbidden topics, and hidden truths. Follow us on social media by searching Curious Realm. To download the official Curious Realm app and view the Knowledge Vault, or become a sponsor of Curious Realm, visit our website at CuriousRealm.com. Curious Realm is available on your favorite podcast and video services, CuriousRealm.com, as well as KGRA Radio, APR TV, and the official Curious Realm app for Roku devices. Curious Realm is a proud member of the Ground Zero Media family of podcasts. For more shows and members-only content, visit groundzeroplus.com today. Thanks for listening. Stay curious. And remember, the other side is always watching.